At the mouth of the cave, you take 10 steps forward. One. Your fingers run over your body, tracing along your very tight clothing, your light oiled leathers. Two. Finding the wrist blades, you move your legs in such a way you can feel your ankle blade reassuringly there. You move your soft boots left, avoiding the pressure plate. Four. Every second, as you proceed, you feel your body stretching, articulating. Six. Four more paces. You slide forward. Gravity ceases being a concern. You roll to one hand, then your shoulder, to the side, avoiding a trap that is in fact an enormously long pressure plate. The walls are greased. The ceiling is spiked. So you just have to get over it quickly, sticking to one side. You hear the clang of the blade as you move forward. 8, 9, 10. And now you're past the traps. There's only one layer of traps you've ever encountered. You imagine that if you had tripped any of them, and you don't count the pressure plate as tripped because it must be set up in such a way, you think, analyzing it in your mind, unfolding it on the workbench of your inner spatial thinking. You imagine that if it had hit any resistance as the oiled magical blade moved across the corridor, then it would have decided that there was an intruder. But because it hit nothing at all, and being such a cunningly designed trap, the inner systems stay turned off to conserve magical power. Now you can take off your blindfold. Because to merely observe the workings of any of those traps is to go quite mad. At least for a fortnight or so. You knew that from the get-go because long ago, some thief, escaping, had carved the sign by the door for things one is not meant to see. Not meant to know. Your guild doesn't believe in that. But not meant to see. Luckily, there's a back door, but you can only get out it from the inside. Opening from the outside takes a key, and that's long lost. You proceed forward, past gallery and catacomb, past sarcophagi you never touch, with the red-eyed statues that stand guard over them. Probably the original inhabitants of this place. They don't care about the treasure. But you care about the treasure. Or more precisely, some people who really could use some help, who are of your acquaintance, care about the treasure. People down in their luck. People who are between jobs right now. People who could just use a little money to make a difference in their communities. And so, the bag slung at your side, a bag of holding with a capacity that well outstrips an entire carriage, is waiting. Waiting to take some of the spare gold, bullion, carved ornaments, bits and pieces, stones, artwork. Maybe a painting or two, if you can get it in a stretch. It's not like the dragon will mind. Further down the corridor, deeper into the lair, you see statues lining the gallery that aren't like the ones from before. These ones are frozen in positions of surprise, or in one case, terror. And you assume they must be people who broke in and triggered the internal defense systems. You don't really know what those are. What you do know is that sometimes the dragon is there, and sometimes the dragon is not there. This makes no difference to your conduct, because the dragon won't wake up, even if it's there. But you always wonder where it goes, when instead of a massive scaled form, all heat and glory, crouched on the vast fields of gold, instead you just see the hills and dunes rising and falling, and nothing else. You walk forward. You open your bag. You reach out and touch a glistening coin. The fingertips of your gloves. They leave the palms bare so you can brush them over things. So that you can really feel through. But the leather itself is enchanted to protect. You think about how many protections you have laid over yourself. And how this place, of all the treasure hoards you've stood in, is the one with the least oppressive magical presence. Then you think about the daggers at your sides, with their hilts taken from a willow maiden in exchange for quite a large offering, which let you resist corruption, binding, resist being permanently made someone's thrall. It's not like they keep you from getting intensely high off of the Amazon's presence, or falling under the sway of a siren's song, but you have your smarts for that. Or at least, a willingness to accept that the prize of such pleasure is worth it. Being able to hang around them more often, well, that's wonderful. It's just also a nice thing you're doing for the Amazons. They don't like bringing enthralled humans home when they don't intend to. And given that the stronger, and more interested they get, by which you mean aroused. Oh, no, you can't be stopping and thinking about Amazons on the job. You scold yourself. There'll be time at the end of all this. There'll be time to go hang out and find what pleasure you can find in downtime. This is a job. Ahead of you at the end of the vast hall is what used to be some kind of throne room. The throne has been shattered down, but around it are arrayed piles of gold. The pillars have been taken out. They were decorative anyway. There are more traps, you know. You can see them. Recessed holes against the walls hiding darts, but you've never found any pressure plate. You've seen tendrils of force weaving through the walls, some kind of eldritch parasite that lives there, symbiotically with the other creatures in the dungeon. But nothing has ever attacked you in this hall. And you see her, the dragon, laying atop her pile of gold. You traded some treasure from this place once to an Amazon who was down on her luck and who was carrying a number of books. You wanted one on dragons so you could identify this one's features. Thousands of years old, to judge by the tenor of the scales. Female. The eyes are never open, which is good, because a dragon that sleeps with one eye open is fully awake. The myth that they can sleep with just one eye open to keep watch for danger is actually that, a myth spread by dragons to trick thieves into walking in front of them. And given the baleful light that a dragon's eye emits, you always check. You do a few other tests as well. You never take it for granted that all the traps are still off, so you don't walk in front of any of the dart ports. You give the parasite in the walls a wide berth, nodding to it, although you're not sure it has eyes. If you define who your friends are by who sees you the most in the world consistently, who do you meet twice or three times or 10 times in a year if we're getting extravagant, then that thing would probably be it. In any event, the dragon too. You walk over to the hoard, open your bag, and just start shoveling the best looking pieces into it. Gems for preference, but ingots are okay too. The bag weighs 20 pounds no matter what you put into it. You push in as much as you can of the most valuable pieces that are also nearest the door, because you don't really want to traverse over the dragon's hoard. Every now and then you see something deeper in, and you actually do quest over the dunes, but you've only ever done that when the dragon isn't present, or, you know, they are shapeshifters. The thought occurs to you that maybe, just maybe, it could be possible that the dragon turns into something else, becomes something smaller that vanishes behind the dunes. Or maybe that it wakes up and leaves. That brief, hair-raising, prickling paranoia isn't enough to make you leave, because you have some people in need who could really use this stuff. You rise up, your bag full, truly full. You didn't make more than a tiny dent in the very edge of the hoard. There are fields upon fields, acres upon acres of gold, and the way it pours from the furthest edge of the hall tells you that every space beyond this front room is also filled. You don't know what treasures could be in there. And you're not going to push your luck today. You know the defenses up to this point. this point in the hall where the dragon could clearly see you if she opened her eye, is safe. Safe enough for someone like you. And you know the side door, which is beyond those red-eyed statues back toward the entranceway, who never do turn and never do strike, presumably because you don't try to rob the graves of their ancient masters. Out there, the secret door will take you out of here. Other than that, you know nothing about this catacomb, and maybe it's best you don't know. There's enough treasure here you could retire. But then what would you do with your time? Turning around, you head back toward the entrance. Your footfalls carry you from there. You think of a warm bed and a drink, and maybe some pleasant company for an evening. You think of many things, but mostly a warm bed and some pleasant company. One hand drifts to the hilt of your dagger, and you do what you always do, which is say a silent moment of thanks to this dragon for hoarding all this treasure and then going to sleep. You have no illusions that it probably came here by force and murder, but those things are far enough in the past, and by way of amends to your species, you're more than happy to come and grab some. You don't really need justifications. You're a thief by day, and you've always had very vigorous and well-thought-out ideas about the redistribution of wealth, namely to you and those you care about, and anyone else who happens to be around when you have excess wealth to spend. That's the interesting thing. Your friends, most of them blackguards, rogues, mercenaries, cutthroats of every kind, think that you must always have the fullest purse of all of them. For example, you know where they sleep. They've often issued threats to that effect. But your purse is pretty much always empty at the end of the day. Pretty much always has been. You might have enough for that in room, enough for that drink. You've slept under the stairs more often than not, lately, taking whatever little room the innkeeper will give you for a copper or two, and when the stairs aren't available, the stars will do. But tonight, a warm room, because having taken your hoard from here, you head to a nearby drop-off point where down-on-their-luck people are waiting, mostly contacts who are willing to pretend that it is generous alm donations from the church or a windfall from a bumper crop, people who will launder the source of these funds. Because while a treasure hunter or an adventurer might come through and might buy goods and services, taking charity from people outside your community is something these small folk are less likely to do. And you chose your meeting point wisely, close to the village you're helping, close to the people who really had a few rough harvests, but also close to an inn, a very nice inn where you can go and get yourself something to drink, with a pretty proprietor who is quite easy on the eyes, and her alluring girlfriend who you find even more attractive for your own reasons. And these thoughts might show on your face because there's a chuckle from the good-natured old monk who takes the money from you and bows very deeply. He knows what you do, because he sheltered you more than once when you needed to hide out, when you were younger, when you were foolish, when your every step did not approach as close as a normal person can get to magic. Well, you guess you're not a normal person, thinking of your circumvention of the countermeasures in the dragon's hold earlier. And then you find it. The place you'd intended to go. And you pull out your pouch. Not the magical one, your personal belt pouch that you've kept all these years. The place you first shoved a few coppers and silvers when pickpocketing in a marketplace forever ago. And inside, there's a single gold piece, which is wages in full for a month's skilled labor. You had much more than that before you walked into the dragon's cave. But all of your spoils went alongside everything you took from there. And this one coin that you kept, because you liked the design on it, is all going to be spent away tonight at your favorite inn. You think back, while you head there, to all the different peculiar things you've spotted in the Dragon's Hall, just near the entrance. There's a little anteroom or closet. You hid in there the very first time you saw the parasite inside the walls. In this case, you found a broken lute, some old clothes, human-sized, a few shed scales, a locket of no real value that was at the bottom of a chest, and you left it there. You wonder what the story in that place is, but the story tonight is that a bunch of people will eat, successfully pay taxes to their feudal lord, which you can then steal back from his vaults, and you've made a note to do so, and will otherwise live in comfort instead of stress and anxiety. And you will go find a place that really deserves some patronage in these lean times, and hand over that coin. And tonight, you'll have one round on the dragon, and to her health.